Welcome to another episode of Disrupt, a home healthcare news podcast. I'm Morgan Gonzalez, associate editor of HHCN, and I'll be your host for this episode. Today, I'm chatting with Margaret Haynes, the president and CEO of franchise in-home care provider Right at Home. Margaret sat down with me to discuss Right at Home's strategic plan, the benefits and challenges of a franchise model, and the advocacy efforts needed to drive access to in-home care. Let's dive right in. Hi, Margaret. Thanks so much for being here with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
I'm really excited to dig into everything you have going on right now at Right at Home. To start, could you just walk me through your current overall strategic plan for the company? I know we've talked previously about your four pillars for the overall strategy.
Yeah, and maybe it'll be helpful just let me paint a picture of kind of who Right at Home is real quick in terms of, yeah, this is a big year for us. We're super excited because Right at Home started as a brand back in 1995. So we're celebrating 30 years this year as a brand and 25 years of franchising. So the brand started franchising in 2000. But we are in the U.S. We have a big footprint within the U.S. We've got about 565 territories across the U.S. and continuing to grow each year. We're in 47 of the 50 states. We also in five other countries with another 200 and almost 210 territories from an international perspective. And our mission is to improve the quality of life for those that we serve. That was the mission that started 30 years ago, and we're as passionate today as we were 30 years ago. So when I think about our strategic plan, we kind of operate on a three-year vision in terms of where we want to go. As we think about strategic planning, we're working on this rolling three-year view. And so when I stepped into the CEO role back in 2022, we built out a three-year plan that then we started executing in 23, 24, and then this is our third year of it. But we always think about our business model in kind of four main components around supply, demand, quality, and operations, you know, efficiency. And so when we're building our strategic plan, we're always thinking about those kind of main pillars. And certainly growth. So network growth is, when we say growth, that's the on the client side and the caregiver side, because we know there's so much opportunity out there. We're just on the cusp of these baby boomers that are going to need and benefit from our services and help us touch more lives in a very meaningful way and letting them age wherever they call home. So we do a lot of focus on just how do we help drive growth. And that's growth of clients that can benefit from our services. As I said, we're always about touching more lives. Those amazing caregivers throughout all of the communities in which we have locations. How can we be that employer of choice in the local market? So each of our franchise owners are the individual employer of their caregivers. But how can we as a brand make that the best experience for the caregivers? And then how do we continue to expand our footprint, right? So as we want to live out the mission as best as we can, we're also looking to bring in additional owners that are coming into the market that want to, in their local community, do something that's really, really meaningful. And then we're always looking at, from a growth perspective, around additional payer sources. So how can we help bring more services and understanding the dynamics around what that takes? So that's kind of the growth side of always part of our strategic plan. Then we're always thinking about innovation and, you know, how can we continuously innovate? And innovation can be as small as an enhancement in a process to some big new thing. And we certainly have innovation that's happening across that entire spectrum as I think about across the brand. And then we're always looking at operational excellence and how do we continue to increase the care quality? Always wanting to make sure that we're making it the best experience for the client that's receiving our services, the family that's trusting us in caring for their loved one, and all the team members that those local offices employ and making that a great experience within their local communities. So we're really focused on a lot of different things from a strategy perspective, ultimately because we're celebrating 30 years and we're ready to celebrate another 30 years in the future and on, because it's just such a wonderful service to be a part of.
Well, congrats on anniversary. It sounds like we're talking to you at a great time, partly because I know at HHCN, we've seen a ton in the news about Right at Home growing lately. We covered, wrote a story recently about it. And I know that's, you know, a priority for y'all in those sort of three categories that you mentioned. Just could you describe more about your overall plan for growth and where you'd like to see Right at Home, you know, maybe in 5 years and 10 years?
Yeah, when I think about, gosh, 5 years and 10 years from now, again, we're all about living out our mission. So we want to just continue to touch as many lives as possible. Right now, on a weekly basis, just in the U.S. alone, we're doing about 473,000 hours of care a week. And that's exciting. It's a big number, but, you know, I'd love to see that double in 5 to 10 years. And we know that there's so much demand out there that people are going to need our services. We've got this aging population that's moving into now what is kind of the sweet spot of what where we see them, you know, leveraging our services today. And that's a great opportunity. So we're certainly focused on footprint expansion so that in those communities where we're not, we'd love to bring the Right at Home mission. I've been a consumer of Right at Home services. And we could talk for hours and hours and hours about what that meant to me and my sisters and my dad when my mom was receiving services, and then ultimately my dad when he was receiving services. But so our growth is all around the footprint itself, but also each of the individual franchise offices. So we're always working closely with them to help them continue to grow their business because they equally are wanting to touch as many lives as possible in their local communities and really, you know, bring this industry to life, this service to life in their local communities, because it creates so much value for everyone that's touched by it. And it's, I think that's why it is a very popular industry that individuals are looking at when they're thinking about, gosh, I'd love to go in business for myself. And we certainly provide a way for them to do that without going into business by themselves.
Fantastic. And I want to talk more about some of the other priorities that you talked about. But first, you're talking about supporting franchise owners. So let's talk a little bit more about the franchise model. What do you see as the biggest competitive advantages and then challenges specific to the franchise model and the home care industry today?
Yeah. So I think some of the biggest benefits of the franchising model in general is that it's that whole concept of you can go in business for yourself, but not by yourself. So you're actually with a franchise model, it's something that's already been proven. It's something that it's a concept that's already up and running. So when Alan Hager, for example, our founder for Right at Home, he started the business in 1995 and he ran it for 5 years, showing that, yes, this is something that you could build a viable business in a local community and make a living from it. And so then built the infrastructure around it to say, okay, then how can I replicate that across all models, both in the U.S. and obviously from an international perspective. And that's the beauty of franchising, is it gives you something that has already walked in the shoes that you're now getting ready to step into as a new business owner. And I think that gives a lot of comfort. And as an industry as a whole, franchising as an industry itself, it is the backbone of small business across our economy. And it, when you look at the success rate of small businesses that start through a franchise concept versus just a mom and pop type startup, the odds of success are higher because of the best practices and the things that surround. And so from my perspective in the corporate office here, our whole goal is to help our franchise owners build sustainable, profitable businesses. And so we're really focused on how can we help them do that, give them all the tools to surround them with the things that if executed in their local market, they have a great opportunity to build this great asset. And it's kind of fun watching, being 30 years now as a brand and 25 years in franchising, we actually have some early adopters of our concept, right, that started early in 2000, 2001, 2002. So they've been in the business now 22, 23 years, and they're passing it on to their kids. And so their kids are coming in, and it's so fun to see legacy owners coming in and taking over from a business perspective, having their children come in and take that from that legacy owner. Pretty exciting.
That is exciting. That must be really exciting to see. And then what about some of the the challenges, looking at operational challenges, as well as maybe if there's any different challenges to growth for the franchise model, maybe than other models.
Yeah, I think there's, with everything, there's pros and cons. And so some of the challenges from a franchising perspective, when I think globally as a franchise network, for example, at our size, sometimes pivoting because you've got, we win the hearts and minds of all these owners that are out there running in their local markets. If there's things that we need to change and whatnot, sometimes that can take a little bit longer than if it was just an individual shop and the way you go. I think some of the challenges too can be if someone is coming in with the mindset of, I just want the brand, I really don't care about everything else that's tied to the franchise model, that's where all the value is. That then sometimes it, if someone is a maverick and really wants to just call all the shots and once they sign the agreement, really not be engaged, that just isn't a good working model for either party. And so we do a lot of work when we're engaging with prospects to make sure that it is the right combination of what they're looking for and the value that we can bring to them, because we certainly, what I think is one of many things that sets Right at Home apart in our industry and in franchising in general is the way in which we build such a supportive culture with the franchisees, them themselves, with others that are walking in the same shoes, whether they're, near them or states away, but also that really strong relationship between them and us. And we don't think of it as us and them, because we are holistically here to have everybody be successful. And we really focus on that from a support perspective. But there can be challenges in terms of kind of, it's more we have to, we don't dictate, but we give suggestions and win the hearts and minds in knowing that we're aligned in our goals with our franchisees.
And you talked about change, pivoting, being slower, maybe a little slower for franchise models. So how do you approach instituting change of any kind?
Yeah. Well, and I think, again, what a positive is for the franchise model is the franchisor is really charged with reading the tea leaves from a macro level, really watching what's going on with the industry, what's changing, start to think about 3, 4, 5 years in advance. So then that individual franchisee in their market can stay more micro-focused on in their market, what's going on and the things that they're addressing. So from a change perspective, we deal with that change process by looking years out and then bringing the system along so that we're there and ready. And a great example is many years ago, we saw a shift in healthcare and we knew that more care was going to be pushed into the home, even before the pandemic came about and really made that, like telehealth just really skyrocketed during the pandemic. We saw that coming even before the pandemic and started working on, okay, what's our plan to help franchisees as they want to move into that next level of care? How can we help them do that? And what are the things that they need to take into consideration? Or right now, we're doing a lot of testing from an innovation perspective around different technologies, because technology is going to continue to play a bigger role in the future. How can we take that technology, test it in either company-owned locations or with some franchise owners that are very innovative, learn all the things that we need to learn, make mistakes, all of that, so that then when it's time to bring it to the network and they have something that they can decide whether they want to bring in their local market, we can already talk to them about, here's how you can make it profitably. Here's how it can work in your local market. So I think that's a benefit of franchising and also how we're looking at keeping up with the amount of change by anticipating change and getting ready for it in advance.
Perfect. And turning back to something that you talked about in terms of growing caregivers and, caregiver supply, I know a major challenge for the home care industry is just the high demand for services like you're talking about. We're on the cusp of it, but the limited caregiver supply. How can providers address this issue?
Yeah. So there definitely is a need for more caregivers. We're on this collision course, right, of demand is going to be through the roof and there's not an equal tax basis behind them of workers and whatnot. What we know is that when we look across the caregivers that work today for the Right at Home brand, they cross a wide range of age groups, all of that. So that gives us a large pool to choose from. So we have caregivers today that may be baby boomers or maybe traditionalists that, you know, are just in really good health and want to continue to give back. You know, we over the years, we've talked about, you know, in some cases for retirees, it's like, this is a way I can volunteer with a paycheck, right? It's a way in which I can still love on my community, support some of my peers in ways that they need assistance. So we have caregivers that range from, you know, 18, 19, 20 year olds that might be going into nursing school, whatever the case may be. Moms that, you know, their kids are now back in school and they've got some more time and they just want something, to retirees that have left big jobs and now just want to give back to their communities. But we're always looking at, there's not going to just be enough caregivers. And that's where innovation is going to play in a role. And then certainly from a federal advocacy perspective, there's things that we're doing to support caregivers. And we know that beyond just the professional caregivers that choose to be caregivers and working for an agency like Right at Home, there's a lot of family caregivers out there that are doing it without compensation. Right. So they're the adult children or those that we call the sandwich generation that are taking care of their younger kids, but they're also taking care of their parents. And so there's lots of things we do to support them. But we also, from just a brand perspective, are very honed in on how do we make sure in each of those local communities where we have a presence that that individual office is the employer of choice in their community, and how can they look at every aspects of that caregiver journey from when they want to engage with the brand and saying, hey, I'd love to become a caregiver, or do you have hours? I've already been a caregiver. Break it down into micro experiences, and how do we make that experience for them the best one so that when they have hours to work, we want them to first think of the Right at Home brand in their local market and say, I'd love to check with my Right at Home office first, because of how they treat me, how they understand me, how they support me. And so that's a lot of what we focus on. We've also added a lot of technology over the last couple of years that helps with that engagement process with caregivers, whether it's an applicant tracking system that makes it easier for the flow and the touch points, to something that is engaging with them while they're in the home to just support them, because it can sometimes feel lonely for a caregiver because they're going out to individual homes. They're not coming to a work environment like a Starbucks or something, right? You know, something that where the consumer comes to you, they're going out to the consumer.
What are the factors that are influencing the caregiver supply right now?
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that are impacting the caregiver supply. Certainly there's just, there is training that you have to have in many states. So there's different licensure requirements in different states. So some states, because of the licensure requirements, it's getting people interested in becoming a caregiver. The sheer just volume of, so we're an hourly paid kind of care workforce, like other industries out there that have hourly paid workers. But I would tell you that a caregiver is a calling. And so understanding and talking about what that calling is and engaging with colleges and high school health programs and whatnot, and talking about what this role is of caregiver. And word of mouth is a big element of caregiving, where a caregiver will tell somebody else about, hey, this is what I'm doing. It's such a good feel type role that you can have. It's just very different than other roles. And that's not a knock on any other roles. Everybody knows what their kind of calling is. But it is a calling. And so trying to find those right individuals. And so then we also know that we need to continue to find ways to, as a country, bring in additional workers that can help support across all different industries. And caregiving is certainly no different than that.
So these are all the factors influencing it right now. How do you anticipate the overall landscape will look like in terms of caregiver supply over the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah. So we're always going to be talking about there's just not enough caregivers. And I think all industries are going to face that as the baby boomers that are filling a lot of different roles across industries, they start to retire. So there's not going to be enough doctors. There's not going to be enough nurses. There's not going to be enough lawyers and bankers and construction workers, all of that. I think that's just part of this societal thing of this aging population that we're getting ready to go through. And other countries are obviously seeing it as well. So it's a global kind of thing. But certainly with the caregivers and what we see in the future, I do see the dynamic changing a bit. So historically, as a business model, it's been 1 hour of care for one caregiver. We are starting to see more kind of what I would call shared care services, where a caregiver may be going into a community and may be seeing multiple clients that either are in a facility that they're going in to see or in a retirement community that live next door or down the street or close by, where they may be going and doing those high touch things, those bath visits and whatnot. And that technology, that's where technology is going to have to come into play to provide some of that additional support when the caregiver can't be there. So I see some of those dynamics changing when we think about 5, 10, 15 years into the future. We'll see some of that, and we're starting to see some of that already in pockets of areas. But it'll be a dynamic that we have to do because so much demand and not an equal same amount of supply. But we'll always be talking about there's not enough caregivers. And there's certainly plenty of people that can benefit from the services.
And speaking of how technology can support caregivers and going back to Right at Home's focus on innovation, how does Right at Home use AI? What's your approach to AI overall?
Yeah, so we, again, kind of reading the tea leaves in advance, 3 years ago, we were saying we've got to start getting ready for this AI. And AI has been around for a while, but it really kind of was a boom, I think, for the general population with ChatGPT, right, coming out, and everybody was having fun with that. But so we've had AI elements infused into operational things over the last 10 years, but we recognize that it's only going to accelerate. And so in our 3-year plan that we put in place back in the middle of 2022 was we are going to build out a team, one that's focused just around innovation. So innovation around the business model and innovation around technology. And then separately, we were going to bring in AI-specific resources. And so we have talent now in the organization that all they're thinking about is AI. And AI, for me, it encompasses a lot of things. And it scares me in some regards, but it also really excites me. And so I think we're going to see it used in so many different ways in the next, again, 5, 10, 15, 20 years. So we, from an AI perspective, have a couple things that we're, from an operational perspective, that's infused into our technology that we use for scheduling caregivers and clients and making that more efficient. And we'll continue to use AI for things that are more repetitive in the office. Because if you can make those repetitive things done through an AI module, then you free up time for more of the relationship-based things. And our business at the end of the day is very relationship-based. So the more time that we can just focus on loving on caregivers and staff and clients and their families, that's a wonderful thing. So I think that that will be exciting. But then also AI is helping from a technology perspective around how it's used in the home. And I think AI in the future is going to make even how we as individuals are treated, like from a medical perspective, instead of being treated and diagnosed on averages of things that have learned, they're going to understand us as individuals, right? And very pinpointed, what does Margaret need in terms of whatever I might be working through versus, you know, the next person that walks in the door. And I think that's exciting too. What scares me is the bad stuff that can come from AI and, you know, the scams that can happen and, you know, the voice that can be captured in just a nanosecond and then it can be used against. And seniors are a very vulnerable population. So it's those things that scare me a bit about AI. But we're very focused on AI. We actually have a partnership with our local university here with some AI technology that they're developing, and we're working with them hand in hand that helps those that are suffering with COPD. So I think there's going to be so many new ways in which technology and AI combined, I kind of group them together, is really going to enhance the overall aging experience for all of us.
And what's the best way to integrate AI into, a company like yours, sort of overall? Is it finding the right vendor or the right partner? Is that step one?
Yeah. I mean, I think first of all, you need to have a strategy. So we even did a strategic planning session just around AI, and we had an expert outside group come in and help us think through, okay, what are good uses of AI and where can we go? I think if you do it without a plan, you could head down a path that isn't great. And I think even when we talk with our own offices, you want to have good, thoughtful adoption of AI. And make sure that you understand what it is that it's opening up to so that you're not creating situations where it could have the ugly side of it versus what's intended to do. So I always say, starting with this, it's having a plan. And that's certainly what we did, is using experts to come in and help us start to map out what can this look like over the next 5 to 10 years. And then certainly you want to pick good partners, individuals that have the same culture, the same core elements in terms of how you want to do business and the way in which you want to ensure that you're protecting privacy, all those things, because those can quickly get out there if you're not careful, right?
And I know we've talked previously about the importance of advocacy work for the home care industry. Which potential or actual policy changes are you most concerned about right now that are most top of mind?
Yeah. So Right at Home is a member of the Home Care Association of America, or HCAOA is commonly what it's referred to. I actually sit on the board and have for the last 3 years. And we just had our advocacy day in Washington, D.C., the middle of April here on, I think it was the 9th, whatever that Wednesday was. But one of the things, first and foremost, a huge shout out. So the 118th Congress, so the end of last year, they actually ended up passing the 21st Century Elizabeth Dole Veterans Healthcare and Benefits Improvement Act. And this was a huge act that HCAOA and the industry as a whole, we have been advocating for years, because it expands and accelerates the supplements that the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs gives to veterans and addresses the rapidly growing needs of veterans. And primarily, it now allows veterans to spend the same amount on non-institutional care as what they could have done for institutional care. So before, there was a despairing benefit, and a veteran got more benefit if they went to institutional care than if they stayed in their home. And we said, you've got to make that parallel. You've got to put it on the same playing field, because at home is where the majority of people want to be anyways. And why would you not support a veteran? And we love supporting our veterans. So that was huge. So I just shout out for that. There are several things that we're advocating for right now, though, in terms of, we certainly want ways in which it makes caregiving easier, supporting the expense of caregiving. So we're looking at, how can we help through tax credits or things that will help financing care for American families. So there's a couple bills that have been introduced, another one that's getting reintroduced. So there's the Credit for Caring Act and the Lowering Costs for Caregivers Act and the Home Care for Seniors Act, all really around allowing, for example, many people have flexible spending accounts or health savings accounts through their benefits that come from their employer. Why not allow those tax pre-tax dollars to be used to support if a family is either supporting mom and dad that are getting care, or they have a loved one in their family that's needing home care, being able to use those same dollars. So something that's really easy to do. We also are advocating for continuous Skilled Nursing Quality Improvement Act. And that's really around streamlining quality care for medically fragile children. Right at Home itself doesn't take care of medically fragile children, but across our industry, that's something that's really important. And then certainly, the immigration and making sure that from an immigration perspective, how can we make it easier for caregivers to come into the country? And so we're asking caregiving to be added to Schedule A, where nurses and some other key professions are being listed so that it can be easier to bring in some quality caregivers to supplement this caregiver shortage that we know is happening today and will continue to be exacerbated in the future. But you also asked me about, are there some things that are, that are maybe we're not looking forward to or that we're watching? And there are some elements around just the business model itself. And there's been an 80-20 rule that's been discussed from time to time from a Medicare perspective and a Medicaid perspective. And we're always looking at reimbursement rates. And it always concerns me when we have governments kind of getting involved in the economics of a business, because what's being proposed doesn't allow agencies to actually build a profitable business. And we need businesses to be profitable in order for them to be a going concern, in order for them to stay in business. And so those have been challenges. And then we know that there's a lot of pressure in our entitlement programs right now, and the government is trying to figure out this math problem, which is why we feel home care is such an important piece of service that we provide, because we don't draw on the entitlement program. So we're not Medicare. That's home health. But we come alongside home health and partner with them so that home health does a great job in delivering on what the Medicare program is going to provide, but that doesn't always meet all the needs of that loved one. And so we want to work alongside home health and with that family to say, but what else does mom and dad need? And so the importance of home care and legislation that supports home care is because it allows us to not draw down on those precious resources that are sitting in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, because we know they're trying to spread those across a bigger population right now with the baby boomers aging and needing to draw on the services and not that equal size tax base behind it. So the things that concern us the most are things that don't take into account the economics of running a business and knowing that you've got to be able to have reasonable margins in order to be in business. And we need all these agencies to stay in business in order to provide the care. And then things that don't support allowing people to obviously have care in their home, which is where they want to age.
How receptive are folks in Washington to home care priorities?
Yeah, I think they are very receptive, you know, in general, because everybody has either a mom, a dad, a grandma, a grandpa, aunt, uncle, whatever the case may be. So when you make it personal, they get it. And so I find, you know, when we get to engage and lobby, they understand where we're coming from. But they also sometimes they get us confused, home care with home health and CMS and the things that CMS is overseeing. And it's important that we draw those distinctions. But I want home health to be really successful too, because they serve a great market. And then we come alongside, like I said, it's a very strong symbiotic. And we have really good relationships with home health. There's this guide program right now that's specific to individuals that are suffering from dementia. And so we are working alongside home health to show the value of that program and hoping to get that an adopted program officially through CMS. And we take those programs really seriously because, again, at the end of the day, we just want to touch lives in a meaningful way. We just want to help people through this thing called aging that none of us are probably super excited about the day that we're going to need a caregiver. But at the same time, we're all going to go through aging. And so we want to help navigate through that and then certainly make it the best experience possible.
Yeah, I'm getting those gray hairs and processing them as they come. But it sounds like there's an education element to what you're talking about.
There is. Yeah. There really is. And we just have to keep educating, right? Because people change jobs, they change roles. And quite frankly, people really don't think about home care and getting old until something happens, right? Mom or dad fell, or they fell, and now they find themselves in this situation where they now have something that they're no longer able to do themselves. But yeah, nobody's sitting back and saying, I cannot wait until I get to have a caregiver, right? I wish it was the case, because the caregivers are absolutely amazing. But it means then that I'm now at a point where I can't do everything myself. And so we try to focus on how can we continue to shine a light on the independence of the person receiving the care, let them continue to do what they can do, and let's lovingly come alongside them and help them with those other things that they just need a little assistance.
Amazing. Okay, zooming out a little bit, looking at the home care industry broadly, what emerging trends or innovations are you most excited about?
Yeah, you know, I think I'm really just excited about where the industry is going. And certainly, we've talked about the opportunity. There's so much. So I'm excited about how many more lives we're going to be able to touch. But I think with the innovation that's happening and just this leap that we're making and the use of these models that are going to just get smarter and smarter about our healthcare and whatnot, that really is going to continue to enhance care. I know, you know, the lifespan, you know, has increased for us as an overall population, and that's wonderful. I'm still also a believer that just because we can doesn't mean we should. You know, in some cases, you get to a point where even though you could do some heroics, you know, we talked through that as my father was passing, and we made the decision just because we could doesn't mean we should. And so families will always be associated with that challenge that they need to as they're navigating, someone's moving through that aging process. But I am excited about what aging means for us in the future. I think, you know, with AI and some of the things that it's going to be able to do and some of the technology, hopefully we can reduce the amount of social isolation that's happening out there. And to me, that's fabulous, because social isolation can, you know, that it causes mental issues. And the more that we can be more connected and support with both technology, I think we're still always, not I think, I know, we are still always going to need that human interaction, and we're always going to need that care. And that's what really excites me as well, is we have the ability for years and years and decades and decades and decades to come. Still, people interaction is going to be important. Yeah, there's the predictions of the robots and the androids and all of that that may look very human-like. They still won't be a human. And so I look forward to, you know, how that's all going to change, but in a way that really continues to give us even more support so more individuals can stay in their home, age gracefully in their home. I hope we tackle a lot of these diseases that are those chronic things that people are living with. And to me, that's exciting for what it means to be in this day and age and what technology can do to just overall health and lifespan and quality of health.
Great. Thank you so much for ending us on a positive, exciting note. Thank you for coming to the podcast. It's been just great having you.
My absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Disrupt. For more news and insights on the home health and home care industries, subscribe to our daily or weekly newsletters at homehealthcarenews.com. Or consider becoming an HHCN Plus member for exclusive content and opportunities. I'm Morgan Gonzalez with WTWH Media, Chicago, Illinois.